Welcome.
You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring Smitten Kitchen. Today we're going to start off with a recipe for braised chickpeas with zucchini and pesto. Last summer, when my younger child joined my older child at sleepaway camp for a month for the first time, leaving us unmoored and a little restless, we made a list of restaurants we'd been meaning to try and friends we don't see enough, and took this task on like it was our job. I barely cooked once. By the end of the third week, everything hurt, and we realized our template for a child-free life, going out late, cocktails on weeknights, and generally behaving despicably, was based on our age and energy level when we were last child-free, which, I'm sorry as this fact seems to upset you guys as much as it does as actual parents, was almost 15 years ago. This year, I vowed to cook at least at home a little bit more, or a little more for the sake of our general vitality. Plus, since it's as hot as the surface of the sun and as humid as a swamp in New York City this July, eating decadent meals and fizzy drinks has lost, well, at least 10% of its usual luster. But what do you cook when you don't have your little Statler and Waldorf heckling you at the table with cantankerous opinions on what you have had the audacity to present them for dinner? Chickpeas, it turns out, and lots of zucchini. And we can't get enough of this one. Here the chickpeas are braised in some broth and olive oil with layers of onion, garlic, and thinly sliced zucchini, summer squash, salt, and pepper flakes on top. For the first 15 minutes, we simmer it with the lid on to soften the vegetables. For the next 30 minutes, we have the lid off, but we only stir it 15 minutes before the end. At the 30-minute mark, the chickpeas are nice, good, tasty. At 45 minutes, however, they're heavenly, plump with all the flavors in the pan and ready to collapse. To finish it, we stir in basil pesto, nestle torn chunks of burrata throughout, and scatter Parmesan or pecorino over the top. Scoop this onto grilled hearty bread and revel. I mean, absolutely revel in the deliciousness before you. So braised chickpeas with zucchini and pesto, here's the recipe, serves four. Time takes 1 hour with prep and the source, Smitten Kitchen. You'll need 2 15-ounce cans of chickpeas, drained and rinsed, 1.5 to 3 cups of vegetable broth, 4 garlic cloves thinly sliced, 1 large yellow onion halved and thinly sliced, 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes, 1 1/2 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1 pound of summer squash or zucchini quartered lengthwise thinly sliced, 1/4 cup of olive oil, 1/4 cup of prepared or store-bought basil pesto, 8 ounces of burrata or 1 cup of fresh ricotta, grated Parmesan cheese to finish, and sliced sourdough or country bread, grilled or toasted. You're going to place the chickpeas and 1.5 cups of broth in a large braiser or saucepan. Scatter the garlic, onion, pepper flakes, salt, and zucchini on top and drizzle olive oil over. There's no need to stir. Bring the ingredients to a simmer and cover with a lid to cook for 45 minutes total. However, at the 15-minute mark, remove the lid, but still no need to stir yet. And at the 30-minute mark, stir the ingredients to evenly combine. If all of the liquid is gone from the pan or the chickpeas are sticking to the bottom, add the remaining 1/2 cup of broth. Remove the pan from the heat and stir in pesto in dollops. Make divots for the burrata, using your fingers to tear it into chunks before nudging them into the pan. Finish with some Parmesan and extra pepper flakes, and then ladle into low bowls and serve with grilled bread. As far as doing ahead, leftovers keep for 4 to 5 days in the fridge. If you're planning ahead, I'd wait to add the finishes, the burrata and the Parmesan, until the chickpeas have reheated. As far as notes, to keep this gluten-free, you'll need to use a gluten-free bread for serving. If the layering of onion, garlic, and vegetables sounds a bit like my one-pan farro with tomatoes, it's not accidental. This dish started out as a zucchini riff on it, which came out absolutely deliciously, but didn't feel new enough to warrant a new recipe on the site. Plus, we love the chickpea version even more. If you'd like to make it at home, however, simply add the zucchini here instead of the tomatoes in the original recipe and finish it with the pesto, burrata, and parmesan as written here. Our next recipe is for wild mushroom and Stilton galette. About 5 years ago, my best friend decided to host Christmas Eve dinner at her new house, and I came over to help, but whew, we had set out a lot of cooking for ourselves. We made this mushroom galette, and I remember thinking at the time it was one of the most elaborate things I'd ever made. But what I really meant was pain in the rear end. It has all of these, well, steps, directions you're not sure are utterly necessary, or bettering of the end product, but you follow them because you don't want to find out the other way that you should have just RTFR'd. The dish didn't reappear in my life until a year ago June at my bridal shower, in the form of a card that she'd tucked into a recipe book that my sister compiled from guests. I laughed when I looked at it. Why would anyone ever make such a pesky recipe again? Me, it turns out. Making it again, I realized it was, yes, a little fussy, but also just so good. A little luxurious. And a treat for people who like strong flavors. Blue cheese and all of the mushrooms that you can find. I think of this like a great side dish for a dinner party. It's rustic, but once you taste it, it's clear that it could easily upstage any rack of lamb or turkey. And for a wiped out Wednesday, well, 10 p.m. is never too late to have the most delicious part of your day. Here's the recipe, mushroom and Stilton galette. Serve 6, the time 1 hour plus rest time. Source, Williams-Sonoma Seasonal Celebration Series, autumn. So 2019 updates, I've sped up the galette dough process, putting it in line with my other galette recipes. As for the mushrooms, I buy a pound of whatever looks good. Sometimes I'll use a pound of brown cremini and it works as well. So for the pastry, you'll need 1 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 8 tablespoons, that's 1/2 cup, 4 ounces or 115 grams, of unsalted butter cut into pieces, 1/4 cup of sour cream or plain yogurt, 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, 1/4 cup of ice water. For the filling, you'll need 1/4 ounce of dried wild mushrooms such as chanterelles, porcini, or shiitakes, 1 cup of boiling water, 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 3/4 cup of green onions, 1 garlic clove minced, 1/2 teaspoon of chopped fresh rosemary, 1/2 teaspoon of chopped fresh thyme, 1/2 pound of assorted fresh wild mushrooms, such as chanterelles, porcini, and shiitakes, brushed clean and large mushrooms thinly sliced. 1/2 pound of fresh button mushrooms, brushed clean and thinly sliced, and then kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper, and 5 ounces of Stilton or another good quality blue cheese. To finish, you need 1 large egg yolk whisked with 1/2 teaspoon of water. This is optional. First, you're going to make the pastry. You're going to whisk together the flour and salt in a large bowl. Sprinkle bits of butter over the dough and, using a pastry blender, cut it in until the mixture resembles coarse meal with the biggest pieces of butter the size of tiny peas. In a small bowl, whisk together the sour cream, lemon juice, and water, and add this to the butter flour mixture. With your fingertips or a wooden spoon, mix in the liquid until large lumps form. Pat the lumps into a ball and do not overwork the dough. Cover with plastic wrap and refrigerate for 1 to 2 hours until very cold. Meanwhile, make the filling. Place the dried mushrooms in a small bowl and add the boiling water. Let stand for 30 minutes until softened. Drain the mushrooms and mince finely. Then heat your oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. In a large sauté pan over medium heat, you're going to melt the butter. Add the green onions and sauté, stirring occasionally until soft, about 5 minutes. Add the garlic, rosemary, and thyme and continue to cook, stirring for 1 minute more. Increase the heat to high, add the fresh and rehydrated mushrooms, season well with salt and pepper, and sauté until the mushrooms are tender and the liquid they released has completely evaporated, about 8 to 10 minutes, and then transfer to a plate and let cool. On a floured work surface, you're going to roll out the dough into a 12-inch round and transfer to an ungreased baking sheet. Crumble the blue cheese into a bowl, add the cooled mushrooms, and stir well. Spread the mixture over the dough, leaving a 1.5-inch border, and then fold the border over the mushrooms and cheese, pleating the edge to make it fit. The center will be open. If you'd like, brush the outside of the dough with the egg wash for a deeper, shinier color, and then bake until golden brown, 30 to 40 minutes. Remove from the oven, let stand for 5 minutes, and then slide the galette onto a serving plate. Cut into wedges and serve hot, warm, or at room temperature. As far as doing ahead, the galette keeps well in the fridge for 4 to 5 days. Next, we've got a recipe for apple pancakes. Am I glad I spilled out my frying pan angst to you already yesterday or what? This morning, when faced with the task of an apple pancake recipe I've been wanting to make for eons, the thought of using that stainless steel pan was enough to make me skip it. But since 232 of you suggested that I get back in with cast iron, I decided to give it another shot. I've had a big and, oh my gosh, so heavy, 12-inch cast iron pan for years. It was a whopping $18, and I hear supposed to be the best investment I've ever made. But despite my repeated no soap, re-seasoning, and tomato avoiding efforts, the seasoning had never gotten to that non-stick-like place. Or so I thought. This morning, I heaved that thing up onto the stove for pancakes, warned Alex that this might be bagel run kind of morning in the end, after all, and got to frying those babies up. And it worked like a charm. It was great. They were great. Nothing stuck, not even a little. Frankly, the only issue is that the pan is way too big for my tiny burner, and the pancakes cooked unevenly, but like I care. After this morning, I can finally be one of those cast iron zealots I was so secretly envious of, never understanding why their cast iron experiences were so much more enlightened than mine. Alas, I'll get more into this in the weeks and months that follow as I reestablish relations with my cast iron and test it out with various dishes. In the meanwhile, oh right, the pancakes. Joan Nathan calls these apple latkes, which is really what got my attention in the first place. I am going to have to beg to differ on that, as they have way too much liquid and flour to really be a latke or fritter. They are pancakes with shredded apples, and while the recipe itself is quite easy, I think it will need some flavor tweaking to get it to a more interesting place. But nevertheless, I think it would be worth it and have made some suggestions in the head notes. So now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go apologize to my cast iron pan for neglecting it for all of these years. We have so much to catch up on. Here's the recipe, apple pancakes adapted from several sources. As I mentioned above, these are mildly flavored as written and benefit from an extra oomph from spice. Cinnamon, a little cardamom, ginger, or a mix of pie spices, and lemon or orange zest. Well, what do you think? I'm eager to see what you all do to step it up a bit. You'll need 2 large eggs, 1.5 cups of milk or plain yogurt, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 3 medium apples, peeled and coarsely grated. I used Yellow Delicious, other baking apples will work. And additional flavorings, see the recipe notes. Vegetable oil for frying, powdered sugar for dusting. Whisk the eggs with the milk or yogurt and sugar in a large bowl. In a smaller bowl, combine the flour, baking powder, and salt. Combine the wet and the dry ingredients and stir in the apples and whatever other flavorings that you see fit. Heat a thin layer of oil in a skillet over low to medium heat. Drop large spoonfuls of batter into the pan and flatten it out a little, otherwise you might have trouble getting them to cook in the center. And cook until golden brown underneath. Flip the pancakes and cook them for an additional 2 or 3 minutes, and either dust with powdered sugar and serve immediately, or keep on a tray in a warmed oven until you are ready to serve them. Our next recipe, essential French onion soup. Well, French onion soup is not just a forever favorite of mine. It's, along with the other recipes I updated this month, what I consider a core recipe in my arsenal because it aligns with so much that I think is important in cooking. It's totally budget-friendly and downright cheap to make. It's made from buy-anywhere ingredients, and very few of them, 99% of the flavor, comes from just onions cooked very slowly, transformed by a technique that you need no advanced cooking skills to master. And it has a depth of flavor that is unparalleled in almost anything else that I know how to make. Up until a few years ago, I only made it one way, Julia Child's. I still think her onion caramelizing technique is great. It saves a little hands-on time, basically a miracle when it comes to caramelizing onions, although nothing is going to make it go quickly. That's how I cooked when I began this site, the way that I was told to, but through repetition and real life, I've made adjustments. For example, I always felt that the soup needed more onions, more bulk for the amount of stock. I never found that the flour added any notable body to the soup the way that it should. It didn't really stay suspended. And when I added booze, it was sometimes wine or vermouth, but just as often a dry sherry or even cognac. And I deglaze the pan with it and cook it off as much as possible. When I began with more onions, I didn't need to cook the soup as long after the stock was added. 15 to 20 minutes is plenty to end up with a soup with good body. And I finish it with as little frippery as possible. Don't have oven-proof bowls? Well, make a casserole of it, like a giant pot pie. Or create individual cheese toasts and drop them into the soup. Want it vegetarian? Use a good dark vegetable stock or mushroom broth, which is a favorite here. The more robust, the better. Cannot possibly imagine spending an hour or longer frequently attending to caramelizing onions? Well, then check out the Food Lab's approaches, pressure cooker or other, to speeding it up. Do you want less hands-on time? Check out the kitchen slow cooker approach. Hate slicing onions? Sigh, that, for me, is the part that I dislike the most. For this, I recommend putting on some music, donning your pink onion goggles, and enjoy knowing that once you get this done, the remainder of the recipe is virtually hands-off. Here's the recipe, essential French onion soup. Serves about 8 time, 1 3/4 to 2 3/4 hours with prep time. Source, Smitten Kitchen. Because this is rich, I use 12-ounce or 1.5-cup ramekins or baking dishes from BIA Cordon Bleu I cannot find online, but here's something kind of close, and there's a link at smittenkitchen.com. Some people prefer it in more of a 16-ounce or 2-cup bowl, and in which case you might only get 6 servings. Tip, I always start with an onion or two more than I need, because due to the vagaries of buying onions from grocery stores in the middle of winter, I never know when I'll get one kind of banged up inside, except reliably any time that I don't buy extras. You need 3 pounds of thinly sliced yellow onions, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, fine sea salt, 1/4 cup of dry sherry, vermouth, or white wine, and this is optional, 1 bay leaf or a few sprigs of thyme. This is also optional, and honestly, I rarely bother. 2 quarts or 8 cups of beef, chicken, or vegetable stock. Mushroom is excellent here as a vegetable stock. The more robust, the better. Freshly ground black pepper, 1 garlic clove, and 1 3/4 to 1 inch thick slice of bread for each bowl of soup. 1/4 cup of grated Gruyere, Comté, or a mix of Gruyere and Parmesan per toast. To caramelize your onions, you're going to melt butter in the bottom of a 5 to 6 quart saucepan or Dutch oven over medium heat. Add the onions, toss to coat them in butter, and cover the pot. Reduce the heat to medium low and let them slowly steep for 15 minutes. They don't need your attention. Uncover the pot and raise the heat slightly and stir in salt. I start with between 1 and 2 teaspoons of fine sea salt, or twice as much kosher salt. Cook the onions, stirring every 5 minutes. You might be fine checking in less often in the beginning until the point when the water in the onions has cooked off, for about 40 to 90 minutes longer. What? The range is crazy. Stoves vary so much, even my own. If your onions are browning before 40 minutes are up, then reduce the heat to low. And if that's still cooking too fast, try a smaller burner. The longer that you cook the onions, the more complex the flavor, but when you're happy with it, you can stop. The ghost of Julia Child will not haunt you. The shame wizard will not taunt you or anything. Then make the soup. Onions are caramelized when they're an even, deep golden brown, sweet and tender. Add sherry or vermouth if you're using, and scrape up any onions stuck to the pan. Cook until it disappears. Add stock and herbs if you're using, and a lot of freshly ground black pepper, and bring the soup to a simmer. Partially cover the pot and simmer for 15 to 20 minutes. Taste and adjust the seasoning as needed, and discard thyme sprigs and bay leaf if you use them. While the soup is finishing, heat your broiler, and if you don't have a broiler, heat your oven as hot as it goes. If your bread is not already stale, for instance, you did not leave the slices out last night to harden, probably because nobody told you to, toast them lightly until firm, and then rub lightly with a raw garlic clove. Line a baking sheet with foil and arrange the soup bowls or vessels on top. To finish, you're going to ladle your soup into bowls and fit a piece of toast, trimming if needed, onto each. Sprinkle with cheese, run under the broiler until the cheese is melted and brown at the edges, and then garnish it with herbs. You can eat it right away, but it's going to stay hot for a good 10 minutes or so if you need more time. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.